Live from the homes of the world's largest prairie dog in Oakley, Kansas, it's the Ringhauser Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of hard-hitting, no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your hosts, author, statesman, songwriter, the president of the Alfalfa Switzler Fan Club, and the legal representative of the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers. A man who takes the responsibilities of oldest brother very seriously, Richard J. Ringhausen. And, are you ready? Is your heart pumping in anticipation? Daredevil, marksman, osteophile, the seven-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion, and winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, a man who can eat an entire package of Oreo cookies at one sitting, the youngest of the Ringhausen brothers, and the star of your show, Alan J. Ringhausen.
You know, I don't know that eating an entire package of Oreos. I'd say there's probably a whole bunch of people that have eaten an entire package of Oreos.
In one sitting?
Yeah.
How about Chip Ahoy's? Could you eat a whole bag of them just one after another?
I could if I really, really wanted to, but I don't have that desire.
Yeah,
if I'm going to be a glutton on something, it's going to be something other than that. You know, like a big package of candy bars or something like that. I don't know.
You know, like those, what do they call those things? Those Kinder something candy bars?
Oh, I could founder on those. Kinder Bueno?
Yeah. Founder on them. You know, that's what they used to always say about horses, you know, that they'd get into,
founder. Yeah.
Get into an apple orchard and founder. I'm not sure what founder means. It like locks up their belly somehow, doesn't it?
I don't know. I just always liked the term, though.
Yeah, I did, too.
You know, something that you said in the intro about the home of the world's largest groundhog.
Yeah.
You know, let's just say that they had...
Prairie dog.
Let's just say they had the world's largest prairie dog in a cage at whatever location it was that you mentioned. And you're standing there looking at it. Could you tell that it was the world's largest groundhog? And would it look any different than some groundhog you see out on the prairie?
Okay, well, let me explain this to you, having made that drive to Oakley, Kansas. When it says the world's largest prairie dog, yeah, it's like a fiberglass statue of a prairie dog. It's like 8 or 10 feet tall.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I was going to say, if it was a live prairie dog, I just doubt that you'd be... And that leads me to another question. I've been driving around the Midwest a lot here lately, and there's tons and tons of soybean fields and corn fields. And when you look out over a cornfield, every plant out there is basically exactly the same size. And why wouldn't you have a corn stalk out there that's 2 or 3 feet taller than any other corn stalk in the field?
Well, that would be a genetic mutation, wouldn't it? I mean, don't these corn companies that make corn seed like pride themselves on their genetics on these things?
Well, I think they probably do, but you would think one would slip through every one in 500 million. I mean, I drive for miles and miles and miles looking at the same field, and then there is no outlier.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, you've gone to a Rolling Stones concert, right? It's full of people in the stadium.
Yeah.
Well, there isn't one that's like 10 feet tall. They're all pretty much the same height, aren't they? I mean, I grant you there's some that are a little shorter, a little taller, but nobody that usually just stands out like a giant.
Occasionally they do, though. If you had like an NBA player in the crowd at, you know, the Aerosmith concert, he would stand out. He would be a deviant, an outlier.
I suppose.
I don't know. Maybe they've perfected corn seed, I guess. I don't know.
Or maybe it's just that it's reached the absolute limit of what the chromosomes will let a corn stalk get to.
I guess. It's maxed out.
Even with humans, you know, there's a limit. I mean, that Robert Wadlow guy that lived in Alton, Illinois,
Yeah, he was stood out in the cornfield.
Yeah, he set the standard, but they don't have him anymore like him, pretty much.
Not for a while. But, you know, some of these NBA players are, you know, 7.5, 8 feet tall.
And you would think they would be genetically building them, you know? Think about
a
kid.
I think the Chinese are.
I think that, you know, a kid that's going to make it in the NBA like that, that's going to be really, really tall, it's going to make millions, right?
You should just clone him.
I mean, wouldn't you think there would be parents out there that would be going right from the start saying, well, you know, here's a chance for us to really cash in. We'll get our kid in the NBA.
Yeah.
So let's genetically modify him to be 8 feet tall.
No, they're doing that in China right now.
How long will it be before that's all over the world, though?
Probably 20 years.
That when you find out you're going to have a child, that you go in and then pick all the attributes of it.
Yep, we want you to be a million-dollar winner. Pick a winner. Okay, this isn't what we were talking about, though. We had a specific...
I just bought a car. Went through the car buying process.
Yeah, yeah. How'd that go?
As good as it gets, man.
Okay.
How many times have you gone through the car negotiation process in your life?
A few times.
Do you do it by yourself or do you take your wife with you?
So I've done it both ways.
Okay. What I found out going to the car dealership, you know, is how transparent the smoozing is that they go through when you come in. Like I went in, you know, and this is in Florida, right?
Yeah. Can we put you in a new car today?
Buying a car in Florida. And as it turned out, I had a St. Louis Blues cap on when I went in.
Okay. Hey, how's the Blues doing this year?
Salesman immediately, like, starts smoothing. My Blues going to do good this year. I mean, just like he was the world's biggest Blues fan down in Tampa, Florida.
Right.
You know, and it's so funny that it's all you can do to not laugh when they start in on it.
Right.
But, you know, what would you say is the number one secret to dealing with a used car dealer when you're going in to buy a car?
Don't tell them what you've got. Don't tell them if you have a trade-in. Just straight up, looking at this car, how much is it?
I think that's part of it. But I think you have to go in with the notion that you will walk out.
Oh, absolutely. That's a given.
If you don't go in with the notion that you will walk out that day, they've got you as soon as you walk in the door.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that they stand around in the coffee break room talking about the different suckers that walked in. And I nailed this guy. I was ready to go down to, you know, 33,000 and he ends up buying for 36. What an idiot.
You know, we go in and so I'm sitting down with the guy, you know, and finally get down to some price, and he's going to do the standard. I'm going to have to go talk to my manager about this, right?
Right, and there is no manager in the building.
You know, so he disappears for a while. And it's like that scene in Fargo where the guy does a salesman. I can't remember. William Macy, right?
He's a car salesman.
And then I got to go talk to the manager. When he goes in the back room, he's just shooting the breeze about the football game stuff, and then comes out and says, he won't let me do it.
Right.
What you need is to be able to have your wife sitting out in the car while you're doing this. And when he comes with a price saying, I got to go out and check with my manager first, and then come back in and say, she says no.
Right. No, I just send her in.
I was going to say, you've got the edge because you got Sarah.
Right.
You know, she's like someone that you would send into a street bazaar in Morocco to negotiate.
I'd send her into... scare the mafia.
Just soften them up, right?
Yeah. Yes, I find here.
You know what kills me too is, you know, you just have to go in right at the start and say, what's the walk out the door price? Because if you do anything else, when you get down to the table, they're gonna throw like 100 different little things that they have, right?
You're going to want a clear coating on this.
And,
down in Florida, the humidity, salt air, you're going to want a clear coat.
You've got to have the.
We're required, wish you had it if you walk out of here.
We're required to have you sign up for this dealership's plan, you know, service plan. You know, I can't scratch that one off, but you do get two free oil changes. Two free oil changes. I said, I'm taking the car to Illinois. Well, when it's time to have the oil changed, when it's time to have the oil changed, what? I'm going to drive it down to Florida and have you guys change the oil for me?
Oh, you got all arrogant with him?
Why?
You call him an idiot? Did you call him an idiot, Rick?
No, but I turned him loose on Suzanne, who demanded that they give us 8 quarts of oil to take with us.
I want the oil now.
So I got this car with 8 quarts of oil and 2 oil filters in the trunk. Right. She also demanded the oil filters.
Wow.
Well, it was coming down to the point where it was going to be, are they going to finally cave in and say, well, we'll go this little extra mile to close the deal? And those 8 quarts of oil were the difference on this one. Okay. But I've done one once where I was buying a truck, right?
Yeah.
And we went in to buy a truck. And we had, for whatever reason, we got truck fever, where we decided we desperately needed a different truck. And so we go into this dealership, and this one's in Illinois, and Belleville. Well, I won't name it. But, you know, it gets down to where we've got the price negotiated, you know, and it's like, I don't know, $25,000 or some outlandish amount of money like that. And the only thing wrong with the truck was that the one of the rear view mirrors needed to be replaced. It didn't function correctly. And told the guy, I said, well, we need to have that done. He says, we can order that rear view mirror. It'll be $75. I said, no. I said, I need you to replace that in order for us to buy it. I got to go talk to my manager on this one.
For $75 mirror.
He comes back and says, can't do it. It's as low as it can go. I said, you will lose a $25,000 sale over that $75 mirror. I don't know what to say. Got up, walked out. And as it turned out in this particular case, once we got away from the parking lot for a bit, we started going, you know, we really don't need a different truck, do we? This one's not that bad.
Right.
You know, for $25,000, we can fix this one a lot.
Right.
And you know, we're driving down the road. Pretty soon, here the phone rings, right? And of course, it's the sales guy. You know, I went back to my manager. They think they can do that mirror, you know. Too bad, buddy.
Too late. We walked away.
Changed your mind. We decided we don't need a truck and just hung up. And that I got message after message for about the next week or so from this guy. You know, that he had made a colossal misjudgment on that one.
Well, he did.
Didn't you say you played this game with some guy that you actually knew?
Yeah. It was a guy I went to school with. And he's a used vehicle salesman. So I went in, you know, figured I'd deal with a classmate. And we got to the breaking point of, was it this? And I said, came to the point where I said, well, I wasn't planning on going that high. You're going to have to come down $500 and we'll close the deal. And he said, can't do it. This is it. This is the limit. I already had to talk about this. I said, you haven't talked with me about it. I said, if you come down $500, I'll buy it. If not, I'm moving on. And he said, can't do it. He said, it's got to be this amount. Stood up, said, told you where I'm at. Walked out the door.
And
he does the call. Okay. We'll take the $500 off. I said, good enough. I'll be back tomorrow. Sign the paperwork. We'll have it ready. And then that same guy is in the stops by the orchard, you know, like a couple of weeks later. He's talking to our brother Dennis. And he said, do you know what your brother Allie did? And Dennis like, what? Finger, what? And he said, he was willing to walk out over just $500. He said, yep. You got to admire that in a guy. I couldn't believe it. For $500, he was going to walk away from a $40,000 vehicle. Vincent, $500, $500. Dad would have been proud of him.
And then he proceeded to come up with the proper term to describe you, right?
Oh, yeah. Started with an A and not for Allie.
Not for Allie. I like that, you know, you're talking about the difference in their commissions, right?
Yeah.
That $500. That's his.
That was his money.
Like you were supposed to, because you're a friend of his, say, let me just write you a check for $500 just because we were such pals in high school.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, if he wasn't still making money, he wouldn't have sold it.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely.
He said, well, I'll sell it, but I'm just breaking even here. Yeah. I love it when they give it. I'm just breaking even. I'm not getting anything out of this.
When they're doubling their money.
You're a good Christian.
that they've stolen the trade-in that they've got from someone else by offering them half what it was worth, and now they're
we can't give you anything for your trade-in. We're just basically scrapping it out or selling it to Allie Ringhausen.
I played that scene out once upon a time when I was 18 years old. I had a used car, and it froze over in the winter and boiled over in the summer, and just had enough of it. So I go in to buy it. It's at the Hardin Ford dealership. Salesman's dead now, so I guess it's not me slandering him too much. But, you know, we come up on a negotiated price, you know, and he says how much he's going to give me, that he'd give me the cash sale rate, right? And it was knocked like $1,000 off whatever the sales price was, or $500 back then. And, I said, that's perfect. I said, oh, and I want to trade in my car too. Whoa, 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 whoa. He says, I can either give you a cash discount or I can give you a trade in. I sit there for a second and go, so essentially you're just taking my trade in car for nothing. If you would have given me this, sold me this car for that same amount as a cash purchase without a trade in. Well, I wouldn't call it that. Well, what would you call it?
I'd take the cash discount and go home and sell the car myself.
Yeah, I think that's the way that played out.
Yeah.
Hey, before we go any further, I got a commercial.
Okay.
Ready for it? Tonight's episode of the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Topps Ringhausen Orchards Trading Cards. Baseball cards, basketball cards, Pokemon cards, throw them in the trash. All the really cool kids collect Ringhausen Orchards trading cards. Imagine opening a pack of cards to find that elusive Brad Ringhausen rookie apple-picking card, or a Rick Ringhausen Orchard manager card. The Ringhausen Orchard trading cards show your favorite apple pickers in a variety of poses. Joe Ringhausen on his tractor, Larry Moose Clunk on a ladder, Denno Ringhausen making cider. And if you're really lucky, maybe that long sought-after card of Alan Ringhausen killing a rattlesnake under a tree. On the back, each card has lifetime statistics, bushels picked, trees pruned, errors, bruise ratio. And don't forget about the fact that every pack of cards comes with a piece of apple-flavored chewing gum with the consistency of cardboard. Get yours today. Topps Ringhausen Orchards Trading Cards at a store near you. Clear.
I think it'll never fly, Orville.
You know, one year, and I can't remember what possessed him, but the Jersey County, Illinois law enforcement officers, the Jerseyville Police Department, and the Jersey County Sheriff's Department, put out a series of police officer trading cards.
Yeah.
Do you remember those? Did you ever see those?
No.
It was like each one of the officers, the sheriff's deputy or police officer, and they had trading cards, and they are like in police officer poses next to the car, you know, holding handcuffs or standing next to a jail cell. And in the back was statistics for them.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, what did they put on the cards for the really crappy cops that didn't get anything done? Most donuts ate?
The new guy? No, they're rookies. The rookie car. Yeah. And if you're lucky, you got in. If you're lucky in your pack, you got like the chief of police.
Wow.
When you're a kid collecting baseball cards, right?
Yeah.
So you'd have all the cards, but every so often you'd get a manager card, you know. And those were, I always thought those were kind of cool when you get a manager card.
I always thought that was kind of weak. What I wanted to get was the team card.
The team cards were like the gold standard card that you'd get in a pack of baseball cards. You know, and I think kids now that collect baseball cards, like if it's 2025, they'll buy the whole box of 2025, the whole series. I don't think anybody goes through the notion of buying them like one pack at a time and sorting out what they get.
Oh, God, no. But the ones that are valuable are the ones who belong to the kids who are out buying one pack at a time.
Oh, back in the day, yeah. Yeah. Of course, none of them had the sense to put their cards in like plastic sleeves like they do now. I mean, so when you're buying a baseball card from the 60s or 70s, I mean, you got to figure there's going to be at least a certain amount of wear in them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's where they get graded.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Like if the kid that put a rubber band around the back of them, big mistake.
Yeah. Huh, it happens.
Okay, I want to go back to the business about buying items. You know that when we were kids, right, we'd have tractors that we used in the orchard and in the farming.
Yeah.
And they were always, well, the ones we bought in the 60s, we still got them. They're in use. But
they're
now,
there.
Have you gone to like a tractor dealership lately? I mean, even guys that are farming just like what we would call regular farms back then have these gigantic tractors, like
yes,
four giant wheels or maybe treads like an army tank has.
Yes.
Do you know how much those things cost?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here trying to picture our dad going in to negotiate on one of those.
Yeah, I don't really even know how you bargain something like that out. And I think a lot of them are leased, aren't they?
I couldn't begin to tell you. I mean, you know, like I said, I think the only brand new tractor I remember us buying was in 1969, that Ford or International, what was that thing? 547, 7?
544
International. It was the first new tractor that I remember us ever having. And the interesting thing is, they're still using it.
still have it, yeah.
What is that, 79, 89, 99, 2009, 2019? That tractor is 55 years old, 56 years old. They're still using it.
And just now breaking it in.
Just now breaking it in.
Hitting its stride.
Okay, let me go back to car dealerships. You've got two kids that you've raised over the years, right?
Right.
Did you go, when it came time for them to get their first car, did you go car shopping with them?
Sarah did.
Oh, you didn't go?
I came back with Julia. Sarah and I were both there.
Was she embarrassed to death at how you two handled that? Or was she just pleased that you did it?
I think she was just satisfied that we did it. But, you know, it was also a learning experience. So now she knows what to do next time. Right?
Right. Right. Call her mom.
And Elizabeth, the oldest one.
No, well, she is your wife.
She needs no negotiating skills. She was born with them.
The last bit of car dealership that I did like that was with my daughter, who go name was Kristen. And the daughter had gone through a rocky patch of having wrecking cars, right?
Yeah.
So it had reached the point where, you know, we couldn't afford to insure anything she had. So it was going to be that you're going to get the best you can get. So we go into you know, it's not even that you go to dealerships at this point. You're going to the guys who buy the cars that dealerships won't take and trade in.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. There's always
so we go to one of those places, and the only thing that's in our range is manual transmission. some old Ford manual transmission. And Kristen has never driven a manual transmission in her life.
Oh, boy.
And I said, well, I'm sorry, dear, but, you know, you shouldn't have brought it to play like this. I mean, this is what we're down to. So we end up buying it, and I drive it home. And next day, you know, we take it up to the high school after class, and I teach her to drive a clutch for the first time.
Yeah, there you go.
And you've not really lived until you've done that life experience with one of your kids. And, you know, she's sitting there trying to find, you know how there's that sweet spot where you can kind of hold the clutch and it'll hold the car in place, but not go forward or backwards.
Yeah.
There's an art to finding that sweet spot. It took her a long time, you know, to where we're having like arguments about, I can't do this. So, well, that's what you're driving to school tomorrow, because I'm not driving you. You're going to do it or you're not. You know, and a lot of them where she'll pop it and kill the motor. And we probably did that like 50 or 60 times.
Before we got 60?
Yeah, probably right close to it. It was an interesting life experience, I'll say that.
Okay. Okay.
But she finally got it.
Remind me not to loan her my vehicle.
Ask Dennis about that.
Oh, yeah, okay. Never mind.
every time Dennis has a vehicle that he wants to finish its useful lifetime, he loans it to Kristen.
Yeah. Now my question, the last one's still running. It's still running.
Oh, it is? I thought it got towed back again.
Yeah, we put it back together.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. So it's ready for her to use again.
I guess.
How many of your kids can drive a stick shift? Any of them?
I don't know that either one of them have ever attempted to drive a stick shift, to be honest with you.
Sarah, can Sarah drive stick shift?
Yeah, she used to drive. I had multiple vehicles that were stick shift. So, yeah, she drove stick shift.
Yeah, Sue and I can too. I taught Suzanne that too. And the good thing is that, like, if you and Sarah or me and Sue were ever on the Amazing Race, you know, and they sent you to some country like, you know, Romania and pulled out the cars for you to drive with a stick, you could drive them.
Well, you know, I actually enjoyed driving a stick shift. It put excitement back into the driving.
I agree with that 100%. To this day, I could drive a car with stick shift and feel fine about it, especially if it was like a sports car.
Oh, absolutely. You expect that in a sports car.
I think you do.
Oh, are we out of time?
We are real close to out of time. I was just looking at that. I guess it's time to go car shopping.
Okay.
is there anything you dread worse than car shopping, though? I'll go back on that just for a minute or two. I find it just horrifying. You know, whenever Sue says...
Every 10 years, I have a colonoscopy, so...
That same category.
Okay. Just trying to find something to relate to it.
Did Sarah line up like five or six cars for you to go look at a time that you go from place to place looking at cars? Or do you just make a hard decision on one car and then either buy it or not and then move on?
Well, the thing is, you have the whole internet has changed car shopping too.
Now, that is true too.
There was a car company, this has been a couple decades ago, that did not have a negotiable price. I mean, they just had a factory price.
Buy it or don't buy it.
Right. Was that Saturn? Was it Saturn company that had that?
That sounds right for some reason. Right.
And, you know, like, you know, if you wanted the Saturn, you know, Skyline, every single Saturn Skyline that was ever made cost $14,000. There was no negotiating.
That's what it should be. When you go in the grocery store, you don't say, I think I'm going to pay you like $8 for this turkey.
This gallon of milk is 2 days away from its expiration date, so I'll give you half.
Don't work that way, does it?
No. But why are cars that way?
I don't know. All right. Hey, it is that time, so I guess I'll see you later from Rick Gator.
And Alligator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour.
The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Cough Drops. If your dog is coughing, he's coughing for a cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that legal business in hand, see you later from Rick Gator and Alligator. This has been a Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network production. Accept no substitutes, because there aren't any.